Thank you for downloading from Richmond First United Methodist. Support for this podcast comes from your generous gifts and donations. You can visit us online at www.richmondfumc.org.
Today's scripture reading is from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 11, verses 5 through 13. Then Jesus said to them, "Suppose you have a friend, and you go to him at midnight and say, 'Friend, lend me 3 loaves of bread. A friend of mine on a journey has come to me, and I have no food to offer him.' And suppose the one inside answers, 'Do not bother me. The door is already locked, and my children and I are in bed. I can't get up and give you anything.' I tell you, even though he will not get up and give you the bread because of friendship, yet because of your shameless audacity, he will surely get up and give you as much as you need. So I say to you, ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be opened to you. For everyone who asks and receives, the one who seeks finds, and the one who knocks, the door will be opened. Which of you fathers, if your son asks for a fish, will give him a snake instead? Or if he asks for an egg, will give him a scorpion? If you then, though you are evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father in heaven give the Holy Spirit to those who ask him?" This is the word of God for the people of God.
I have a friend that I went to high school with. He actually was a couple of years older. His name was Gino. He got married coming right out of high school, had a child. When their little boy was about 6, they discovered he had cancer. In all of my time with Gino going to high school, never knew him to be much of a church person, but this is the sort of thing that brings people home, isn't it? He and his wife and child began going to church, and the little boy loved it. He loved church. He loved the attention he got at church. He loved everything about it. He hated making his bed more than anything in the world. So one day his mother, while the boy was washing up and getting ready for school, went through the bedroom and saw that his bed was unmade, and she thought, well, it was a special treat. She made up his bed for him and didn't say anything about it. He didn't say anything about it either. But the next morning, she noticed when she went through his bedroom at the same hour that the bed had not been made. And she said, well, okay, this is not going to be a habit. And she just went on her way. At the breakfast table that day, he said, "Mom, there's something I don't understand about prayer." And she said, "What's that, honey?" And he said, "Well, yesterday I prayed to God for him to make my bed, and he did. And today, I prayed for him to make my bed, and he didn't." Which is a beautiful observation for all of us, isn't it? I mean, the question arises sometimes when I pray for something and it doesn't happen. Is God really up there? Is he really listening? Does God listen to our prayers? Do our prayers change anything? Or as it was phrased in the card that one of you dropped in the offering plate for this series, do my prayers change God's mind? I wish you had phrased it differently. I wish you had phrased it, "Do prayers work?" Because then I could dodge what you're really asking and say different things, couldn't I? Because of course prayers work, especially when you think of prayer in the larger sense of not just asking for things, but, you know, prayer's supposed to be about thanksgiving and adoration, and how can that not work? It is what it is. It always works. And sometimes prayer is supposed to be about confession, about bearing your heart before God of the things that you know were wrong and you did them anyway, or the things in your life that you need help changing. And how does that not work? It is what it is. It always works. We could say that prayer always changes the prayer, even if it doesn't change the circumstance. There are a lot of ways in which we could say that prayer always works. There's a moment of peace that falls over us sometimes when we just quiet ourselves in the presence of God. And if you'd asked the question that way, I'd be off the hook. But you didn't. You asked, does my prayer change God's mind? There's a part of me that would love to say yes and do the mic drop and walk out of here. Because that's what I believe. And I think it's what most of you believe too, right? Is that we gather together because we believe in a God who's still alive and at work in the world we live in. And that quite often that activity is an answer to our prayers. And I could almost get by with a yes or no answer because I think most of you could give the illustrations to this sermon if I gave you the chance. You could talk about times in your life when you prayed and you know that God answered in the affirmative. You know that He did the thing that you asked for. And maybe the people around you can call it coincidence, and maybe the people around you can say, well, it didn't quite happen. But you know in your own heart that God answered your prayers. About 30 years ago now, I was feeling the call to ministry. And at the time, I never thought I would be a pastor. I just knew that God was calling me to help people. And I had assumed that He probably wanted me to do that in one-on-one setting, like a counselor or something. Why? Because, and people don't believe this because of what I do for a living, but I'm actually an introvert. I'm actually a painfully shy person. And so I just assumed that when God was calling, it was going to be, you know, maybe me and one other person. And if there's a way I could do this without any other people being involved, that might be a good option even. But what I knew is I needed to go to seminary. And this job opened up. Kim and I were working at the Methodist Children's Home at the time. We were on the main campus in Versailles. But in order for us to do all of the things that we needed to do, the job structure needed to change. And this opportunity opened up. The Methodist Home owned a home, a house in Lexington, and they were going to try an experimental program that was somewhere between foster care and institutional care. And they thought Kim and I would be the perfect house parents for that. And so we agreed to do that. The only thing is the Methodist Home maintenance man did not drive out to Lexington to mow the grass, which meant I would have to do it, which is not a big deal, you know, except that ever since I was 10 or 12 years old, I'd had awful allergies to grass. If I went out and cut the grass for 3 days, I was on my back, allergies. Debilitating allergies. And so for us to take this job, which I thought was the door opening up for me to be able to go to seminary and so on, God and I had to have a little talk. And I said, okay, Lord, I've got to be able to cut grass. And then I went outside and started up the mower. Now, you can explain this any way you want to. But I'm here to tell you, I cut the grass. I still cut the grass. As a matter of fact, I cut the grass to relax, as odd as that may seem to some people. You know, that is time when, you know, nobody can interrupt me and it's... And not only did God kind of take away that infirmity in the moment, but I'm starting to get a little bit proud about this. You guys stop me, okay? I've been doing this almost 30 years. I have never missed a Sunday preaching opportunity because of illness, period. Never. Some of you are thinking, well, you should have. See, that's God's answer to my prayers, not yours, I guess. But So that's a time in my life when I feel very strongly, when I know that God answered my prayers. And I believe that you've got them too. If I gave you a chance to talk about them, I believe you would have them. So I'm going to give you a chance to talk about it. Why don't you find a handful of people around you? Move if you have to. We're kind of spaced out in here today with the summer crowd. But find a couple of people and either talk or listen about a time when God answered a prayer in your life. Okay? On your mark, get set, go. People should be moving or talking or something. Go, 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 go. You can do it, Mike. There we go. Okay, I hate to interrupt, but on the other hand, I hope I'm interrupting. And here's my observation. Nobody had any trouble with that, right? I mean, I looked around. I didn't see a group in which everyone was staring at each other waiting for somebody else to start. We are here in part because we believe that God does respond to prayers, that our prayers in some way change God's mind. This wonderful scripture that Alex read for us just a moment ago, where Jesus tells a story about the going to the neighbor's house to ask for bread and say, be insistent, keep at it. The neighbor will change his mind. That seems odd to us in a way. In fact, I've heard people say, you know, if you prayed for it once and have enough faith, that ought to be enough. Well, if the Lord keeps laying it on your heart, you keep going. That's what Jesus said. There's a wonderful story in the Old Testament. It's in the 18th chapter of Genesis, about two-thirds of the way through the chapter. And God has looked down on the world. And he has seen the city of Sodom, and he's recognized the evil of the place, and he's decided he's going to destroy it. But he pauses for a moment and realizes he ought to tell Abraham before he does so. Now, why does God feel like it's any of Abraham's business? Okay, well, first of all, because Abraham has family there. Abraham's family had reached a size where they could no longer cohabitate on the same land. And so he had sent his nephew and Lot and his kids and said, you either take the high ground or the low ground, and I'll go wherever you don't go. And so Lot and his kids had moved down into the city, and Lot is living in Sodom at the time. So Abraham is going to have this burden for the city, and God comes to him and he says, you know, the place is just rotten to the core, Abraham. And I'm gonna need to do something about it. And Abraham says, but there are good people there. Lord, if there were 50 good people in the city of Sodom, would you spare the city? And God said, well, if there were 50 good people, I'd spare the city. Yes, I'd do that. I said, well, give or take five. What is 45? What 45? Okay, if there's 45 good people, I'll spare the city. Give or take five. What about 40? Sure. Find me 40 righteous people in Sodom, I'll spare you. How about 30? And they keep going at this until finally God agrees, if there are as many as 10 righteous people in the city of Sodom, I will not destroy it. What about the audacity of Abraham saying, bargaining with God, doing this kind of reverse auction, and you know, bid and lower until finally, you know, he gets the number down to a number that he thinks is going to be low enough? And what about a God who allows us to change his mind? See, to go to prayer with the kind of expectation that it's going to have an impact, for many of us, we're going to have to kind of redraw our picture of God, because many of us sort of have an image of God as being this distant, benevolent, good, mind you, but he's a benevolent dictator or tyrant out there somewhere who's calling all the shots and saying how things are going to go, and this is my plan, A, B, C, D, E, and I'm God, and nobody can change it. But we've discovered, as we unpack some of the other questions you had, that in fact God gives us human beings choices in the world, and it's because of some of the choices we've made that evil has entered into the world, and it's because evil has entered into the world that God has invited us to continue in what was our original purpose as human beings, which is to partner with Him in taking care of His creation. This is not a benign, distant dictator. This is a daddy playing with his kids on the floor of the living room. 10. Let's go with 10. This is a God who wants to partner with us and allow us to help Him in the redemption of the world. Grandkids are visiting this week, and it changes a lot in the house. Changes our standard of what it means to have a room actually cleaned up, for one thing. It also, everything you go to do, you need to have a helper. I went out to grill hot dogs and hamburgers on the 4th of July, and Will was my helper. Will is 8 years old. His help consisted primarily of running around the patio, making Star Wars shooting noises with his mouth, and narrating everything that was going on in his head, and from time to time coming over to hold the flipper tongs while I was moving things around on the grill with the spatula, or vice versa. That was the extent of his contribution. But why do we do that with our kids? We do, don't we? Whether it's at home or in the classroom or in Sunday school, he says, "You're my helper. Why do we do that? There's something connecting us to them in that moment and challenging them to grow into what we're hoping they'll one day become. We're invited to help. We moved into our first parsonage some years ago. Somehow, Kim held it together until we got back into the car at the end of the parsonage visit, because it was awful. I don't mean to say anything mean about the church there. They were doing the best they could. They had limited means and everything, but the house was a mess. There were cables running across the foyer floor from one room to another room, just bare on the floor, for TV and I don't know what all. The carpet in most of the rooms had been salvaged from the local funeral home after a tornado. When I had been in high school, so, all right. The only redeeming factor of this house was it had a front porch, a nice big yard, and a front porch that went all the way across the front of the house. And we could picture ourselves sitting on that front porch there in town as people walked up and down the sidewalk. And so that was the saving factor because we moved somewhat unexpectedly. Kim still had work to do back in the place where we had lived before. And so she was away all day one day, and I was going by the local hardware store, and they had a porch swing in the window. I thought, that's it. That's it. Her birthday, Mother's Day, all of it. Gonna wrap it up. Gonna put the porch swing on the front of the house. So I went and I paid for it, and the guy said, "Can I carry it out to the car for you?" And I said, "Sure." When he came out with it, it was a flat cardboard box about this thick. And all of a sudden I realized, oh no, that swing cannot be inside that box in one piece. And it wasn't. It was in about a jillion pieces when I took it out of the box on the front porch. With then my oldest two boys were then 6 and 4, and they wanted to help me build the swing. So we set to. By and large, by help, they meant let's pick up the seat slats and use them as swords. And we had fencing matches going back and forth across the porch, which usually ended in stepping on whatever I was trying to put together down at the other end. And finally I said, Danny, put that down for just a minute. Get me that bag of nuts and bolts and bring it over to me. He ran over and he grabbed it by the bottom two corners and picked it up to carry to me. And all of the million nuts and bolts in that bag came out and started bouncing and rolling all over the porch and off the porch into the bushes at the edge. I said, okay, boys, remember Easter when we went hunting for eggs? Right now we're going to hunt for these little nuts and bolts. They look like this, and I need all of them that you can find out from underneath the bushes. And so we did it like, finally I get it all put together, stood on top of two milk crates to screw the hook eyes up in the top of the porch. I hang it up, and the boys inform me that it's crooked. I said, thanks for your observation. And we counted the number of chain links from the ceiling down to the and got it even finally, and just got it all hung and the milk crates put away. And Kim comes driving up into the driveway, and she gets out, and the boys run down and grab her, one around each leg. Mommy, look what we made for you. And did I stop them? She probably knew that they did not climb up on top of the milk crates and put those hook eyes up there. But it was our gift to her, not my gift to her. It was our gift to her. God gives us the privilege of helping, of being partners in what He's trying to do in the world. And that partnership begins with the work of prayer. To go over and over and over again and say, Lord, I don't think this is right. There's a childlike faith to it, isn't there? There's a lot of things in the Bible that change across time. If you're a careful reader of the Bible, you realize that our attitude as God's people, our attitude towards violence has changed across the centuries. As God's people, our attitudes about prosperity has changed across the centuries. As God's people, our attitude is about enemies, or even our attitude about what it means to be God's people has changed across the centuries. But one thing has been there from the beginning of the book to the end of the book. Here in Genesis, we've got Abraham saying, Lord, no. How about 10? In fact, prayer is our native language, if you stop and think about it. Humanity's been talking to God longer than we've been talking to each other. From Genesis, we march on, and we have this steady stream of people who had the audacity to tell God they didn't think it was right and He ought to do something. And the world changes when Moses says, no, don't destroy your people because they slipped into idolatry. No, don't do it. And He relents. King Saul prayed for victory in battle, and King David prayed for forgiveness when he had gone astray. And King Solomon prayed for wisdom, and in each case, God changed and said, yes, I'm there for you. Jonah prayed to be delivered from the belly of the whale, and not only did he hear Jonah's prayers, but God heard the prayers of the sailors from Tarshish and the king of Nineveh. Elijah prayed and fire fell from heaven. Hezekiah prayed because the Assyrian armies were closing in around Jerusalem and they were seemed to be undefeatable in battle, and he prayed to God to do something. And I've told you this is my favorite verse in the Bible more than once. When they woke up the next morning, they were dead. I think that's just a great turn of phrase. Go all the way to the book of Revelation, chapter 8, and there's this scene. In heaven, there is an altar, and there is a fire on the altar. And there is an angel whose job it is to gather up incense and carry it over to the altar and bind it together with the fire and then throw that down from heaven into the world that you and I live in. And we're told that the incense in that censer is the prayers of the saints. Listen to this. Listen to this. He takes our prayers and he wraps them in fire. And he hurls them back into our universe and things change. Until finally we arrive at the wedding feast of the Lamb at the end of the book. From the beginning of the book to the end of the book, the story never changes. Yes, yes, you are partners with me. Yes, your prayers matter. Now, some of you maybe read enough Bible, you remember, didn't he go ahead and destroy Sodom? Yes, he did. But he spared Lot. He didn't answer the prayers the way Abraham thought he would. As a matter of fact, we're not sure Abraham ever knew. As the story is told, Abraham's watching from the mountain, watching the city being destroyed. We're not sure he ever even knew Lot made it out. And we're going to talk next week about what happens when you think God didn't hear. But today, we're talking about when he did. So, Gino's little boy came downstairs. His mommy said, we've got to take you to the doctor today for your treatment. He said, no, we don't. She said, yeah, today's the day. You won't be going to school today. We're taking you to... He said, mommy, Jesus told me I'm all better now. She said, well, let's go to the doctor and ask him. Guess what? He's all better now. Had a call from a church member. He was at the hospital with his daughter. She was a promising high school athlete. She'd had an accident. Her leg was all tore up. I went down, sat with him during the surgery, and we were talking. I said, you know, these youngsters, they heal, they heal. She'll be all right. He says, no, Pastor, listen, when we're at the church, you can be the expert. He says, but I'm a doctor. I said, I've seen the x-rays. She might walk again. She'll never run. I said, well, let's pray. He said, I'll pray. Yes, I'll pray. But I'm telling you, I've seen this over and over again. So we prayed, and then I did something I'd never done before. And I don't know, I haven't done it since either, but I need to remember to do this. Because we prayed for her that day, and then I put a memo in my cell phone. On the 1 year anniversary, it came up, it just says, where's Alice? And when it started coming up, I go, Alice, oh, Alice. On the 3 year anniversary, that memo came up again. I go, Alice, Alice, Alice who? Oh, Alice. Wonder where she is. I called. She'd gone to university on a soccer scholarship. I said, Doc, listen to this. Listen why I called you. We were on a mission trip to Peru. One of the things we did on these mission trips is we set up an optical clinic. There's a wonderful man in Louisville who has a ministry. He has bought autorefractors, which is the thing that you look in when you go to the eye doctor that tells what your prescription is. And he loans them out to mission teams who are going out to do these eyeglass clinics. And he wrote a computer program so that you can take sets of eyeglasses, get the prescriptions measured, and drop them into these boxes that are like little filing boxes for glasses. They would have several trays deep, and each tray would hold about 100 pair of glasses. And we took 3,000 pairs of glasses with us to Peru in duffel bags. And then we take the autorefractor, and we could point it into people's eyes, read the prescription, enter the prescription into the computer. It would tell us box number 84, slot number 115, or whatever. They were numbers of that order of magnitude. And we would go over there, and oftentimes it would list us three that were close, and we'd get the glasses out, and we'd try them on and see if they fit. And usually you'd find a pair that, you know, it's not an exact match because these were used glasses and the prescriptions were kind of a guess sometimes. But usually we could find a pair that would make things better anyway. So we had a mom bring in this one little girl, and our translator was having trouble making out the story because this family didn't speak Spanish either. They spoke a native dialect. But evidently, mom wanted her daughter to be able to go to school, but she could not read the letters on the page. She could not see the words on the page, much less read. My dad was with me on the trip. He says, "We've got to fit this girl. We've got to fit this girl." We ran the autorefractor, and it came up with an error message, which it does when the prescription is so wonky that it couldn't possibly be right. But we ran it again. We ran it a third time. The prescription came up. She was farsighted in one eye, nearsighted in the other eye, and then both eyes were, I couldn't remember the word at first service either, but the eyeball is misshapen. Yeah, you got it. There you go. That. And so we typed it in, and of course the computer told us we were out of our mind as well. Of course we don't have any glasses like that. No human being could have eyes like that. So, well, I've got one right here. So my dad kind of dropped down into a chair and just started praying. And then he got up and he walked over to the duffel bags that all those boxes had been in, and he pulled out a Walmart shopping bag that had about five pair of glasses in the bottom of it. And he said, "What are these? What are the prescriptions on those?" They said, "Oh, those wouldn't read, so we couldn't put them in the filing system. We weren't even supposed to bring those. I don't know who put those in the bag." He reached into the bag and pulled out a pair of glasses. He said, "Let's try these." We put them on her face, and I wish you had all been there, because she just lit up. She could see clearly for the first time in her life, and we put the page in front of her, and before we even did the eye test, you could tell, this girl can see. And her mother said, "Praise Jesus." That was the only English she knew. She ran around hugging everybody, and it's in, you know. So here's what I want you to hear today. The God of the universe has invited us to be in partnership with Him in what He is doing in the world. From the beginning, it has not changed. He's invited us to pray, to talk to Him, to wrestle with Him, to argue with Him, to pray. as the first step in making these changes. And he hasn't changed. Across the centuries, he hasn't changed. He is still flinging fire from heaven in response to our prayers. And the dead are finding life again. And the lame can walk. And the blind can see. He hasn't quit. Too often we have.
To hear more sermons, find out more about us, and see what's going on in our community, visit us online at www.richmondfumc.org. This has been Richmond First United Methodist Church, growing disciples who make a difference.